This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Since You Asked is a specialty show that includes articles and columns on advice, commentary, and opinion. This program is funded by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. Views expressed in this program are those of the authors or publications and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or its volunteer readers. My name is Alita, and I am your volunteer reader. Our first article is Ask the Ethicist, from the June 27th, 2026 New York Times by Kwame Anthony Appiah. My awful mother is getting Alzheimer's. What do I owe her? I am the eldest of three middle-aged siblings and by far the most stable. Our parents divorced when we were young, and both were neglectful and emotionally abusive. My mother once kicked me out at 17 because her boyfriend told her to choose between him and me. My siblings have always been closer to her, and she has always favored them. In my 30s, I managed to establish a distant but civil relationship with both parents. I see my mother about once every 2 years and speak to her roughly once a month. Now in her 80s, my mother is showing signs of Alzheimer's. Her husband recently told me that if he dies first, I will be responsible for her care. I don't think I can do it. The thought of having her live with me makes me physically sick. My siblings aren't likely to help. Since that conversation almost a year ago, I have thought about this every day. What, if anything, do I owe my mother? From the Ethicist. Let's hope that the boyfriend who got your mother to kick you out when you were a minor isn't the husband who now thinks he can command you to take care of her. Nobody has the right to ask this of you. We may owe something to those who raised us, but we have no duty to abandon our own lives to look after them, especially when they failed in their parental duties. Tell her husband you're not going to take on her care and that he needs to make necessary preparations. He should consult with an elder care lawyer, identify a local area agency on aging, and arrange advance directives and other long-term plans while your mother still has the capacity to participate in those decisions. A trustee to manage her affairs once he's gone should be appointed. These are things you can suggest to him anyway. They are not things you need to do. Responses from readers. If your mom were drinking herself to death, that would be one thing. But she is merely aging, and she will soon be helpless. Your mom took care of you when you were helpless. You can count yourself lucky to have the chance to help her. I had a very similar experience with an abusive mother. Her personality changed completely when the dementia got to the moderate stage. She became a nice person, full of supportive comments, compliments, and loving messages. All the things that would have been nice to experience when growing up and throughout my early adulthood. She was in assisted living and eventually a nursing home, but I was responsible for most of her care and saw her almost every day. I could not have done that had her personality not changed. I'm told this is really common. Nice people become difficult at these stages. Nasty, critical people become nice. Certainly, do not have her live with you, but you might find some relief in those later stages when your mother might actually become loving and motherlike. There may be no ethical duty, but many states have filial responsibility laws. The child might seek advice to establish a written denial of relationship in case the mother is hospitalized, or do everyone a favor and suggest the mother participate in her own care planning, including the advance directive. Don't let her victimize you again. Once you made that decision, you'll feel like a great weight has been lifted. Even if you had a loving parent, no one can force you to take on such a responsibility. But with an abusive one? No way. Don't think of it as, she made her bed, let her lie in it. Think of it as you being free. Compassion does not require sacrificing your own mental health. There is a difference between ensuring someone is safe and becoming their full-time caregiver. One of the Ten Commandments is honor your mother and father, not love your mother and father. Adult children who survived abusive childhoods should not be judged for setting boundaries, even at the end of a parent's life. Sometimes the most loving thing you can do for both yourself and your parent is to help arrange appropriate care for them without reliving decades of trauma. Next, a reprint in the July 3rd, 2026 New York Times from a Well column from about a year ago, July 14th, 2025. How healthy are peaches? Experts share all of the juicy details. There's a reason you need a napkin when you bite into a ripe summer peach. The fruit is nearly 90% water. In addition to helping you stay hydrated, peaches contain nutrients that keep your eyes healthy and may reduce chronic disease risk. Here are some of their biggest benefits. Their potassium is helpful on summer days. Getting fluids from fruit and other food sources is just as good as drinking a glass of water, said Diane Stadler, the director of the graduate program in human nutrition at Oregon Health and Science University. In addition to their high water content, peaches contain a modest dose of the electrolyte potassium, which you sweat out during exercise and on hot days, she said. Electrolytes like potassium help your muscles contract, your heart pump, and your neurons fire. One small peach contains about 180 milligrams of potassium, which is about 5% of the recommended daily amount. By comparison, one noon electrolyte tablet contains about 125 milligrams. They're rich in flavonoids and carotenoids. Peaches combine two groups of pigments that you don't often see together in other fruits and vegetables, said Mary Ann Lila, a distinguished professor in the Plants for Human Health Institute at North Carolina State University. Their signature sunset colors come from flavonoids and carotenoids, chemicals plants produce as a defense mechanism against insects and other harmful effects of sunlight. Research suggests that people who eat a diet rich in flavonoids, which produces the peach's red and pink shades, tend to have lower risk of heart disease. Flavonoids can also keep memory and cognition sharp, Dr. Lila said. After gut bacteria break them down, they release chemicals into the bloodstream that can cross into the brain. Dr. Lila has studied flavonoids using wild blueberry powder, not peaches, and her research has found that a diet rich in them may improve reaction times, motor skills, and information processing in older adults. Carotenoids, responsible for peaches' orange tones, are powerful antioxidants, added Beth Olson, an associate professor of nutrition at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Antioxidants can help reduce disease risk by binding to free radicals, molecules that can cause damage to our tissues and trigger inflammation. They provide a modest amount of vitamin A. Carotenoids have a second benefit. The body can convert them into vitamin A. A small peach contains the equivalent of 35 micrograms of vitamin A, around 4% of the recommended daily amount. Vitamin A is best known for its role in eye health and vision. That's because there's a key building block in the retina, the part of the eye that converts light into information that it sends to the brain, Dr. Lila said. It's also crucial for cell division, Dr. Olson said, including those cells that need to help replace themselves frequently, like immune and skin cells. What's the best way to eat peaches? To maximize the nutritional benefit, don't peel them, Dr. Lila said. Most of the good stuff is in the skin. That includes much of the vitamin A and polyphenols, plus a few grams of heart and gut-healthy fiber. Before you tuck into that peach, run it under cold water and dry it with a paper towel. That should be enough to remove pesticides and potentially harmful bacteria, Dr. Stadler said. While nothing beats a fresh peach, frozen or canned varieties are also nutritious, as long as there's no sugar added, Dr. Olson said. Just keep in mind that you won't get the health benefit of the skin. Dr. Lila recommends cooking peaches without exposing them to too much heat, since that can degrade some important nutrients like vitamin A. Her favorite method is to cut a peach in half, brush it with olive oil, and grill them. Moving on to Carolyn Hacks from the July 4th, 2026 Washington Post. Okay to nag a huge favor out of mom to help fretful mother-in-law? Dear Carolyn, is it okay to nag a favor out of my mom to help my mother-in-law out? My husband and I always get a place at the shore for 4 weeks in the summer after the kids get out of school. I work from home, so I am down here the whole time. He's here Thursday night till Monday morning. My mom always stays with us to watch the kids while I'm working. Her boyfriend usually spends this time visiting with his grown sons. This year, we invited my recently widowed mother-in-law to stay with us, too. Unfortunately, she and my mom have never really gotten along. They're just very different people. My mom has been widowed for 20 years, travels extensively, teaches science at a city community college. My mother-in-law is a timid woman who was a stay-at-home mom and whose main social outlet is church. The first day, she annoyed my mom by asking for the umpteenth time if my mom's boyfriend had proposed yet. Neither of them has any interest in marriage, but my mother-in-law can't accept that. She tries to sympathize with my mom over the situation, which just irritates my mom. During the past week, my mother-in-law was afraid something terrible was going to happen to three women alone with two children. She's a nervous wreck when my mom takes the kids to the beach and doesn't want us walking to a restaurant for dinner since we come home after dark. My mom has no patience for this and continues to live like she always did. I want to ask my mom's boyfriend to join us so my mother-in-law can relax and enjoy herself like she does when my husband is here. My mom doesn't want to indulge my mother-in-law's paranoia, but admits her boyfriend would come if she asked. Is it okay if I lean on my mom pretty hard to get this favor out of her? If I nag her enough this weekend, then I know she'll give in. I hate seeing how miserable my mother-in-law is when she could be enjoying herself with a man here. It may be stupid, and yes, we'll be a little crowded, but that's our reality. Signed, At the Shore. At the Shore. My goodness, stop pandering to your mother-in-law. Your mom has the right idea. Be yourselves, and within that context, kind and accommodating hosts to your mother-in-law. No need to move heaven and earth. And certainly the boyfriend's grown sons deserve their father's time more than your mother-in-law deserves a bodyguard to protect her from her mind's own phantoms. She will either find a way to adapt to the world as it is, or she won't. If she doesn't, then Monday morning will wend its way to Thursday night in due time. And soon this chapter will close as you find some other way than this annual ritual to include your mother-in-law. Because your mom deserves her time, too. Whoever indulged all your mother-in-law's neuroses and prejudices, wow, to this point certainly did her no favors. From a reader. Do be gentle with your mother-in-law. Is this her first family vacation without her husband? Yes, her paranoia shouldn't be indulged, but easy does it. From Carolyn. Of course, that's what my kind and accommodating was for. That is totally appropriate, of course, as was inviting the mother-in-law to begin with this year as a gesture of compassion. Lovely and right. But, whew, pulling the boyfriend away from his own family to validate a completely fictional worldview? There has to be a line. There are also other valid approaches. Diversion, for example. Someone with enough idleness on her hands to ask the same question umpteenth time and be miserable with nerves needs to be handed something to do. Her resume says it. She's an ex-stay-at-home mom with church as her main social outlet. No doubt she has the crowd care skills for a beach rental with grandkids, which she can contribute as gently or robustly as she needs towards feeling valued, anchored, and at home. And now, Asking Eric by R. Eric Thomas. From the July 2nd, 2026 Washington Post. Accidental voicemail reveals in-law's true feelings. Dear Eric, on Mother's Day, I received a voicemail on my cell phone from my sister-in-law. It evidently was a butt call that recorded my brother, sister-in-law, and two of their friends having a good time drinking and bad-mouthing me. In the voicemail, my sister-in-law told their friends that her husband's sister was a piece of work, to which my brother responded, "She's nuts." They both said that they needed an interpreter to translate my text messages because, once in a while, I misspell a word or two. They were rolling in laughter during the entire voicemail at my expense. They said several not-so-nice things about me. All of a sudden, during the voicemail, my sister-in-law said, "Wait." She must have noticed her phone had called mine and the conversation ended. This did not sound like things my sister-in-law would say. She goes to Bible study and professes to be a religious person. But of course, they were drinking, and their friend said, "I think I'm drunk." This voicemail hurt me very much. My husband and I will be at a family gathering in a couple of weeks, and my brother and sister-in-law will also be there. Should I just say hi and go on, or should I drop a hint about the voicemail? She may not have realized that her phone was leaving me this message. I decided to do nothing at this time, but I want her to know that I received the voicemail message. How do you suggest I handle this? Signed, Hurting. Hurting. What an awful thing to hear. I'm so sorry. If you want her to know what you heard, dropping a hint probably won't be enough to fix what needs fixing. Instead, consider calling her up and telling her what you heard and how it impacted you. It need not be accusatory. You can simply tell her the facts. This is what was recorded, and this is what I feel about it. Hopefully, she does the right thing, apologizes, and makes amends. so that you can try to establish a relationship that's more rooted in trust and respect. It won't all happen in one phone call, but by addressing this in advance of the gathering, you'll know where you stand and be better prepared to see her. You may decide that you two need not speak at the gathering. That's fine. This will take time to heal. But if you hold on to it, you risk losing out any enjoyment you might have with the rest of the family. Dear Eric, my friend drives me crazy. All of her life she has made bad decisions. She is 73 years old and cannot retire because she has no financial stability. She has lived with James for 12 years. She told him early on that she was looking for marriage. Marriage has not happened. He's been good to her in many ways. He's taken her on vacations all over the world, but guards his finances. She has no rights of survivorship in his estate. She can remain in his house for 3 months after he dies, and then it has to be sold, and his daughters get everything. She's on her own. The rest of her life decisions are equally convoluted and not in her best interest. She loves to whine, but doesn't make any changes to protect herself. It all came to a head when James's daughter's husband had severe mental illness and committed suicide. His death was tragic on many levels. She told me some private information about him that appalled me. There was a horrific crime involved. She did this after he died. To me, she crossed the line when she did that. I didn't need to know any of it. She did this because I felt very bad for him, and she wanted me to know that he was no angel. I resented her for doing that. So I told her it was time for me to bow out and have ended my relationship with her. I miss her, but I also feel she can't be trusted if she needs to do that posthumously to make her point. What do you think about this turn of events? Signed, Lost Friend. Friend, this relationship was breaking apart long before she shared the private information with you. So, while trust is a major issue, it's clear from your letter that you just don't agree with the way she's lived her life or the choices she's made. As a result, this friendship is misaligned. It's natural to miss a friend, but you should ask yourself what would be different if you tried to reconcile. If nothing changes, your opinion or her actions, you're likely to end up with the same result. And we'll finish up with Miss Manners from the July 2, 2026 Washington Post by Judith Martin, Nicholas Martin, and Jacobina Martin. Is it okay to attend a wedding empty-handed? Dear Miss Manners, my daughter was recently married, a second marriage for both her and for her new husband. They had a lovely ceremony and invited close family and good friends. Well, some good friends. Three of my daughter's friends work with her new husband's ex-wife. The couple received neither cards nor gifts from this trio. She feels they have been manipulated by the ex. What should she do? 1. Should she not send a thank you note to them? 2. Should she just send a note thanking them for attending and celebrating? 3. Should she send a card thanking them for attending with a P.S., such as, I fear your card gift was lost? She does not value the friendship of these three ladies and wants to shame them for their lack of class and manners. Gentle reader, before we get to the how, Miss Manners wants to be sure she understands the goal, which is to shame three guests at your daughter's wedding for their lack of class and manners, presumably while having your daughter display her own. But we have a problem. Three, actually. First, the trio breached no rules of etiquette or good taste, at least nothing that you have related. Wedding gifts are not, you will be surprised to hear, mandatory, so we have nothing to charge them with. Second, you do not send thank you letters simply because someone attended your wedding. Thanking them for attending would therefore not demonstrate your daughter's familiarity with etiquette, but rather the reverse. This eliminates one of your proposed courses of action. Third, shaming or extorting guests is a serious breach of etiquette. This eliminates another proposed course of action. To answer your questions, then, if your daughter wants to demonstrate her good manners, she should forget about this trio and enjoy her honeymoon. And that's it for today. You have been listening to articles and advice columns from Since You Asked. This show is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. This is Alita. I'll be with you again next week. Thank you for listening.
This is Bird Note. Ecologist Adrian Doctor was entranced by birds at an early age.
I grew up in the Netherlands, close to the sea in the city of Haarlem. And, you know, there were a lot of migratory birds around. So I would climb on a dune top and sit there early in the morning and just see all these birds go by. I was very fascinated with common swifts. They're really the sound of the summer, and you hear them screeching over your house, even if you live in a city like I did. But the cool thing about these birds is they're really ultimate flyers.
Common swifts spend most of their lives in the air. They migrate thousands of miles between continents, feasting on flying insects, and even sleeping on the wing. In fact, the only time swifts need to land is while they're nesting.
And after that, they're just off, and they fly almost for 10 months, nonstop, through the air. That really fascinated me, that birds can be so adapted to flight and just be such an ultimate flyer.
Today, Adrian uses weather radar to study how birds migrate and what people can do to protect them on their journey. Hear more about Adrian's research in Season 8 of Bring Birds Back, available in your favorite podcast app and on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Joni Franklin.
There are more than 1 million English words. Next up, word nerd Steph Donoff with some of them worth talking about.
Yes, English is confusing. Take the words weather and weather. First, the noun. What's the weather today? Why, it's raining. Now take the verb, which is a contronym, a word that means the opposite of itself. Will my new umbrella weather survive the rainy weather, or will the rain weather it away, wear it away? Then there's a homonym, a totally different word that sounds the same. The weather is a conjunction used to introduce alternatives, whether or not we should go out in the rainy weather, for example. Well, here is a simple way to keep them all straight. Whether the weather be cold or whether the weather be hot, we'll weather the weather, whatever the weather, whether we like it or not.
That's enough talk about words. Let's go back to listening to them.
Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.